Johanna?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get, can I have a copy of the invoice from Mr. Walkill?
Yeah, I think I got a copy of that too. $500,000.
What? What are we talking about?
It just came in at $5.
Yeah.
I was on my way down here, my phone lit up a little.
Sure, I'm gonna do that.
Power, soccer power equipment?
Yeah, Salkill Power Equipment, they sent us a copy of their invoice.
For the restorative work on the embankment?
Yeah, $500,000.
$500,000.
Why is that your job?
I think maybe it's not our job, I think he's just sending it because he's looking for help.
But it wants to be on the agenda, we met with him, Bob and I went up and met with him.
Okay.
Explained to him he had to call FEMA and all that, gave him all the numbers and everything.
I don't think we're eligible.
I don't think so either, from everything I've looked at.
The first stage is you have to submit the damages, right? Because you have to have enough damages to become eligible, but I don't think we're going to have enough damages.
The one email I saw said they had to have 25 homes with it.
With damage?
Damages that exceeded 40% of their homeowner, 40% of their insurance.
Well, his insurance is probably not covering anything.
He don't have any insurance.
Because he doesn't have any flood insurance.
I have flood insurance.
Okay. How does he get away with that when he lives right on that creek, that he didn't have flood insurance?
How do you get away with it?
Well, not get away with it, I guess he doesn't have a mortgage on the property. I had a mortgage in Roundhouse, had to have flood insurance, I don't have flood insurance on anymore because now I own it free and clear, so that's why it isn't.
Your property depends on the flood plain, I mean, the property insurance company had to decide that it had a certain flood risk before they would charge that.
I can't believe that he is not in the flood plain right where he is.
I don't know.
I'd be amazed.
We have the map here somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, which one?
Yeah, but that might not even show a flood plain there because it sits so high up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the problem, right? That's when embankments.
And it actually split, the stream split up there, years ago. Where it wiped them out, never used to be the flood, where the Salkill was. That did that a few years ago.
So there's a potential there that that might be a change in the flood plain map in the future.
Yeah. Well, Mount Rocky's got up there now, never washed it out.
But they,
And the boulders.
Oh, he got a lot of rock, but it cost him $500,000.
$500,000.
Yeah, well, he's getting screwed too.
Right, well, I would imagine, I mean, that's a lot of money, I don't know.
I shouldn't say that, we're on recording.
I would imagine that.
It's actually not an invoice, it says estimate and invoice.
Okay, but is the work done?
No.
The big cat is still sitting there on the driveway.
So where's your done?
Okay.
Sal John's doing the work. Did I tell you anything, Benny?
Apparently he's notorious for this.
Apparently, they think the government is going to pay it all, so it doesn't really matter what the cost is.
Now give me a real price.
It's not our responsibility anyway.
No, it's not, but I think he just was hoping that there would be some sort of assistance.
Yeah, I mean, we could contact FEMA and say, hey, we have a property owner that's.
Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, Phyllis.
Oh my goodness, Phyllis.
Welcome back.
Hey, Bobby.
Perhaps what he really should do is contact Mike Sullivan and see if Mike is aware of any.
Darren.
Programs.
They cut the tree down.
Oh, good. After months.
Yeah, who did it? The township or?
We didn't do it, it was on wires.
Huh.
We don't touch them on wires unless we absolutely have to.
Was it Blue Ridge?
Yeah. Blue Ridge and Farm Company probably.
What does he mean, redefine stream bed?
I don't know what he means by it.
I don't know if I'd put that down without making sure the DEP.
Yeah, he had it for Matt.
Okay.
Yeah, they gave him a permit immediately because it was actually a dangerous building.
Mm-hmm. Right, but yeah, from the photos, it looked like it got pretty close.
That's the guy with the gun place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does he rent there?
Yeah. Well, he has that, but he also has all the power equipment stuff, the snow
blowers and stuff.
Yeah.
He was lucky they didn't come in yet.
See, there was a grant years ago to do work in that stream, back when Johnny owned it.
Okay.
But the only way he could have got the grant is if the township would sign off on to it, become responsible for it. So you. So that's why he didn't get the grant.
Well, I mean, I don't see why we would want to take it, a responsibility for a private property problem.
No, it's private property, it's,
But that was.
Private property that's on a,
It was like a quarter of a million dollar grant.
Commonwealth waterway and a state road.
And it was a quarter of a million dollar grant, but.
Well, but if he had flood insurance, probably a lot of this would have been covered, or perhaps they would have come out.
Reimbursement eventually, yeah.
And that's what flood insurance is for. I did, confirm with Tetra Tech that we are NFIP eligible, that we're in the program. But since our regulations for floodplain are from 1985, and they don't identify a floodplain manager particularly, she felt that it would be wise for us to revisit that, you know, kind of as soon as we can get around to it.
Did we contact the woman who did the ordinance over in Jefferson and Lehigh Township? She did a nice job. Her name was Sarah. I can't think of her last name, but she was actually recommended by County Conservation District in both Wayne and Lackawanna.
Okay, great.
I think she, her office is in Harrisburg, and she did a great job of redoing the floodplain ordinances in all three.
It's not Sarah Hailstone. Not Sarah Hailstone.
No. I think her name is Thomas or something, Sarah Thomas or something like that. I got to check.
Well, LTAC might be able to get us some examples to look at as well.
Yeah, because she's actually the one that looked at Carson and Helfrich had redone our floodplain ordinance in 2009 or 10 when we did the ordinance. And she actually is the one that said, no, you need to change this.
Yeah, ours is from 1985, and it pretty much says you're not going to build anything in the floodplain, and you're not going to store any chemicals. Right. You're not going to store any chemicals in the floodplain. And that's pretty much all that it said. And it's very simple.
Right.
It's very, very simple.
Well, our floodplain only goes down.
We don't have much, yeah.
And they even changed that a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, they would change it every so often. They come out with the new maps. And I know we confirmed that we adopt the new map, so.
Yeah. You have the Vandermark, and you have the Sock Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, what's this one up here? That's it, just those two, right?
Well, you have the Vandermark, the Vantine.
The Vantine, yeah.
Yeah, they both, they like run side by side.
Right.
We got the Salt Hill on the upper end, but that doesn't.
On the upper end, right.
Yeah. Well, I think what I did with the hazard mitigation plan after talking to Gary is I added a goal, an objective rather than a goal, to do stormwater improvements on the steep slope roadways
right.
in the township, particularly Vandermark Drive,
mm-hmm.
particularly Shakopee, Schoolhouse,
mm-hmm.
any place that I thought off the top of my head, we know we have a steep slope because it's a continuous cycle of stormwater damage, repair, stormwater damage, repairs.
Right.
But, you know, we'll talk about Vandermark.
Yeah. I was going to say, Gary, yeah, it's like, holy crap.
I had another concern, though. I went to go and look at what Gary was talking about, and I did look, Vandermark, no problem, but to try to go up Kern Lane, I have a serious concern about whether a fire truck would get up there.
Fire truck can't get up there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because it can't cross the bridge for one thing.
Yeah.
Right, but, okay, so we have a responsibility for EMS for fire and for emergency service response. Now, I've been told the ambulance has been up there. So
yeah, the ambulance has been there.
But for a fire truck to get out there.
You can't.
Well, what is our liability, Tony, if the fire truck can't get out there?
We're responsible for making sure
well,
they can access.
Are you sure, is that a private road?
Yes.
It's a private road. It's a private road, but we still have, we can't say the
approved,
ambulance doesn't come to you because you live in private.
Okay, let's set back to
is that an
the one on the Salt Hill.
I don't think so.
I didn't think it was subdivision, I just thought it was just...
That predates zoning.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
These are all just little cabins, well, most of them are little cabins. The one on the farthest all the way back, the guy tore the cabin down and built a two-story building, which has four bedrooms, two baths.
There's Malibu Trail that comes off of there, right?
There is a road that is a private driveway. We're not responsible for making sure it's accessible. The homeowner, the road owner is responsible.
The road owner is responsible. So are we responsible to make sure that the road owner does that?
We should notify the road owner if there's an issue, but actually, EMS people should notify the road owner.
I can't believe any of those people can have insurance on their house.
Which house is this?
That big house, I can't believe you could have insurance on it, because there is no way when your insurance agent went there and saw it, and saw where it was, saw the bridge, that they would know, you would know that a fire truck could never make, you can't drive anything over.
I can't drive the backhoe across that bridge.
I know that, I had a conversation with Terry about Kern Lane, and about my concern whether they could get a fire truck up there.
No.
And she indicated that she would ask the guys to look at some drills as to how they would respond if there was an incident. But she also told me that the bridge in Damon Township...
That's the one I was talking about.
That has been a continuous challenge. They have a UTV plan for ambulance extraction from inside that little, there's like five houses there, but they really don't have a fire response plan, and they don't have any way, because they can't take the truck across the bridge, right, so...
Garbage truck, nothing.
No, actually up there on Kern Lane, I think there's only like two houses on Kern Lane. But you could access them from Old Malibu Trail. I think a fire truck would go up that road, it'd be tight, but they'd have to drag the hose across the brook.
But they might be able to do that.
But they could probably do that, unless the brook was flooding.
Flooding.
That's one thing, and...
If it was flooding that bad, though, you might not have a fire.
That's an awful situation.
Right.
That's an awful situation.
But if you go all the way up the far end of Malibu Trail, same thing with that big house I just told you is back in there, that's accessible by going, dragging across the brook.
Yeah, I can understand why it'd be secluded.
But it's secluded, it...
It is secluded.
Well, you know...
Secluded to the point of not having any service.
Well, and that's, you know, my concern is, you know, is there any way for us to, you know, to take to task a private road owner, private road owners who are not maintaining their road to the extent that they can have access to emergency services, or are we just not liable? Because, you know, I mean, that's my concern, is if we're liable...
We would not be responsible, but what we should do, as a matter of course, is just indicate to people and check with the fire company and the ambulance providers that, hey, can you get up there? No, you can't. Well, maybe we should notify them that you need to do something.
What they need to do to change them.
Right.
And that there is a vulnerability.
Something to improve the roadway so that a vehicle, an emergency vehicle can get over there.
I think each property owner owns...
Their section of the road.
Their section of the road, I think that's how...
I think that's how it works.
I think that's how it works, each property owner owns their section of that road.
Because I know I have the same issue with Terry Township, because there's properties that cross the Mall Pawpack Creek, and each of them have individual bridges coming off the state highway, and they're their own bridges. So if the bridges aren't maintained, fire trucks can't get over, they don't get service.
Right.
So we're constantly sending letters, make sure your bridge is maintained, blah, blah, blah. You know, I had the zoning officer sends them out once every 4 or 5 years just to keep people aware that, you know, if there's a cord is broken or something like that, and the fire truck hits it, it's gonna not make it over the bridge.
To add on to that, I also think, and I'm not sure that...
You know right what I'm talking about.
There's a VRBO in one of those, but I'm not sure which one. I don't know for sure, but I have been told.
There's a VRBO?
In one of them.
Over the little place that has the... Oh, gee.
I think so. That's I don't weird. Know for sure.
Did they have to walk over to carry their groceries in? And
that's my notice for me. Shut this off.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, I'll talk to Sean about that too, because really I think we should let the emergency people know and give us an idea. Is there anywhere else in the township that they can't access?
No, not in our township.
You don't think so?
What are you thinking?
I wasn't aware, I mean, I had never tried to go up Kern Lane. I had to look on the map on the GIS to figure out where Kern Lane was, so.
Kern Lane.
I had never been up there before.
Back there to the falls. There really is falls back there.
Well, we attempted to drive up and twice, and we got about 50 feet and had to back out.
No, we
got about 50 feet and had to back out.
Except for that little bridge.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Not
in a long time.
Yeah, that goes straight, and then Kern Lane goes off over that bridge.
Oh, my, that's Kern Lane?
Yeah, Kern Lane.
Oh, now I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You're not getting a truck back there.
Right, and I mean, that's a liability that, you know, I just felt like we needed to either know, do we have liability?
The utility trucks go all the way up.
They'll go up there.
They go up Malibu Trail.
They go up Malibu and cut across?
They go up Malibu and cut across.
They can't get across.
They just go up there and.
Yeah, they've been up all the way to the end of Malibu. I know that.
Yeah, so you.
And how do they compare in terms of weight?
They don't go across the bridge.
They don't cross the bridge, so it doesn't
matter. Well, if they're up there, aren't they in the other township? Aren't they in?
No, this Malibu Trail's not. It's all down below.
Down below.
Just the road that dead ends. They call it Malibu Trail.
Oh, yeah, so that's.
He was talking about the damage.
That's a.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, and I looked at the map that Shahana sent us. The gas line looks like it's right on the edge of the embankment.
The gas line is right where I gotta work. The electric is there, and so is the cable.
Yeah.
No one thought about the fact they were putting it on the outside of the embankment.
Gary, that's a landmark.
Yep.
So all three utilities are right there?
Yep, and, yeah, and the water line's on the other side.
So I would assume, I don't know, Tony. The embankment is our responsibility, is it not?
Well, I gotta get water over that bank.
Part of the road.
Part of the road, since some township took over the road, I guess we're responsible.
Part of our road.
Are you here for that? How in the world did they take that township?
1995, it was taken over, so I looked there, pulled up the road map.
Mm-hmm.
The deed.
Yeah, I don't know who it is.
Who agreed to do that?
Dick Canals.
I think it was.
Mr. Santos. I don't know who the third.
Well, he probably never thought there would be that many problems with the road. That's.
Well, no. It's very poorly laid out.
Mr. Miller did a good song and dance.
Yes. It's poorly laid out.
Very much so did.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Miller?
He was the one that developed.
There's only two ways of
doing it. That was the guy that's the same Miller.
But not Lou Mill. There were two.
Richard Miller?
Robert Miller. Yes. And who was the son?
He's the one that did the condos down in Westfall.
Oh, he did those too? Okay. And then who was the son? Because I bought the property from the mother and the son.
I'm trying to think of what his name was. I can't remember his name.
Swenson.
Randy.
Randy Miller, yeah.
Yeah.
Swenson started it, and then they went bankrupt.
Yeah. So, like I say, when we drove up there, the reason we got our lot of land is because he had no more septic system, and he couldn't build any more houses.
I think Kim is here. Kim Bobreski?
Yes, very good.
It sounded like the last time. Did you want to just do the presentation during the beginning part, or did you want to wait until the meeting, Kim?
No, we can do it at the beginning, whatever works for you guys. Now, I did send over our presentation. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to look at it or review it, or I can give you my little spiel and just let you know what we're doing.
It doesn't matter if it's during, right? Before, during, or after?
Well, she might have an audience.
Do you want an audience, or do you not want an audience, or do you have time? I know last time you had time constraints.
Yes. Yeah, well, I had technical difficulty too.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Shoshana helped me this time to make sure I got in. What we're looking for, support, either, if the council will support unanimously, or if a few people will. You know, we're not looking for volunteer hours. We're not looking for monetary donations or anything like that. Just to support, to try to maybe get some of the infrastructure money is what we're trying to do here.
Okay, I haven't had a chance to read any of this.
What is this?
Are any of the infrastructure projects in our area?
It's all of the Appalachia region. I'm not so familiar with Philadelphia or Pennsylvania. I'm not real sure where Milford falls in there. But we're going to every town, township, borough, county, and just in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky, trying to get support back behind this bill so that we can present it back to when the Congress is in, get back in session. Brunel, I guess they already back in session, but yeah. Because we're hoping to reactivate the CCB or CCC and we're looking to, they went to upgrade the electric system, bring in broadband, reclaim old mines, turn them into parks, and to bring in good union jobs to that area.
It says over 100 elected officials have endorsed the plan. What's the plan?
Well, the plan is to, you know, like we're trying to do like a more sustainable transportation system, to do jobs and to repurpose coal plants, turning them into eco-industrial parks, and do more energy efficient manufacturing, and to bring broadband to the area. And so we're trying to get Congress to give us part of the infrastructure money is what we're trying to do.
And how are you funded?
We are funded, I don't know what, you know what, I honestly don't know exactly how we are funded. Our director had another meeting at 7 o'clock today too, so I apologize, you got the B team today. I'm not really sure what all, where they get all of their funding from.
Are you affiliated with any particular companies? Any for-profit companies?
No. Uh-uh.
Is this an item on the agenda?
Yes, it is. Reimagine Appalachia.
No, I'm sorry I haven't. This is the first I've seen anything regarding this.
Where are you actually located?
They are actually located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I guess there are various foundations that support the organization, but no political money is involved.
What is she asking for?
Endorsement.
You mentioned an executive letter, but, you know, it wasn't part of your slide presentation. Is there?
Right. That was in the email when you were to click on the letter, it would pull, it would take you to the link of that. And then also designing the form for support. Also, if you click on the word form there for the support, that would also take you to the link.
So what does the executive letter actually say, Kim?
Pretty much what the slides are, just telling you about what our plan is and how we want to reactivate the CCC, revive it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what municipalities in our area have endorsed this, and has Pike County endorsed it?
Pike County, you know, I don't have a list of all of the supporters. Let me look and see if I can find if Pike County has endorsed. Because we try to update it as soon as we get endorsements. I apologize. I'm on vacation and I have limited access. I'm trying to do all this from a hotel room. I don't have access to my mainframe where I can get to my drive quickly, so I apologize. Or I can get that information and then I can email that over to you tomorrow if you like.
That would be great. And if there's an actual, like a full scale plan, other than these very broad goals.
I can do that. I can send you over like the white papers and stuff that we have for the organization.
Because it's hard to tell how this would impact us or whether this would be more likely to draw funds away from our area to...
Oh, no. We're not looking to draw funds from your area. We're looking for the infrastructure bill that Joe Biden's proposing. We're trying to get a portion of that pie. Yeah.
Understood. But it's a finite amount of money. And so when right. resources are allocated to one area,
right.
not necessarily shared. And I, you know, looking at your map, you've got a map here that says context. And you've got some heavily colored areas in that map, and we're not one of them.
Okay. All right.
Are we ready?
Yes, I'd like to call the meeting and look for attention to
advisors. Okay.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Minutes of the previous meeting.
Make a motion that we approve the revised minutes of last meeting.
I will second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Shahana, treasurer's report?
Sure, thank you. After the last meeting, I received $29.71 from Magistrate Logistic Court, $10,228.57 from real estate transfer taxes, $511.26 from Hymer, and $269.08 from code inspections. And Milford Township has $311,403.18 in Wayne Bank investment account, $7,188.07 in Wayne Bank payroll account, $17,531.26 in NBT Bank account, $8,190.84 in Clifford General account, and $87,269.95 in Clifford Liquid Fuels account. And that's all.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Shahana, the American Recovery Funding, is that listed in the investment account?
Yes.
And that's just because we didn't have the paperwork finished yet to open the other account.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, Benmark Drive is on that, as you see, he's on the agenda. I met with our engineer last week, for probably the past 30 years, about three quarters of the way up Benmark Drive on the left-hand side, the water has been running down over the back, down into a little development that's below it, which there's a little road down there called Kern Road, and after those two major storms we had, it did a washout. I don't know, it all came at one time because I was never back there before, even though I've lived here forever. It was always a private road, and I just
I'll
go back there. But I did go back there, and I saw it. Some of the washout going down over the bank is 8 and 10 foot deep, 4 foot wide, 3 foot wide, 2 foot wide, and it winds down there. It's knocked a lot of trees down. It's not accessible. Kern Road is not accessible by any machines that we own. The one homeowner that affected the most was up above it. He probably shoveled 30, 35 foot of the road that was with his washout, blocked the road by hand because he couldn't get a machine in there. It's far above our guys being able to fix this. So I've had the engineer come into it, looked at it. He's going to try and decide what we're going to do. We have one thing that bothers me the most up there is where this water goes is the same side of the road where the electric is, the cable is, and the gas line, all underground. So that's something we gotta work around. He's talked about like a stone pond up the top on the edge of the road where the water goes out and then it slowly goes over the bank. He's talked about maybe possible putting a pipe down like you do on the interstates where it goes straight down and it curves off and directly to the brook, which is gonna be really highly expensive because we'll have to have easements of the property below us. But I met with the homeowner that's affected the most. I told him we were working on to it, and he was satisfied with that we are looking into it. And I told him as we progress through, I give him a phone call. I believe he closed up his cabin for the winter. I'm not sure, but he was talking about it. And there's one other house right there that's it's affected a little bit, worse through his driveway and stuff. But
now that pipe that you're talking about, would that be really expensive to do that?
Yeah, because it's going to go down about 200 feet.
It'd be like a flume.
It's going to be like a flume when it goes across. We're going to have to cross Kern Road and cross the piece of property. There's no housing right now, and we're dumping directly into the brook.
So the Kern Road is on this side of the brook?
Yes.
Okay. I went up to Van Martin, so that was where there is a pipe there that comes out, it just kind of dumps at the top, right?
That pipe, what pipe?
This is that pipe.
That culvert right there?
Yep. Well, it's just kind of like an edge pipe, it just kind of dumps.
Yeah, it looks like it's just.
Right, and then.
Well, there's washout, there's no pipes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's a, like, section of concrete.
That's the bottom pipe.
That just kind of got displaced?
That broke off, that's the bottom pipe, that yours. The black pipe you're showing, that's the bottom pipe.
Okay, and then there's this area at the top where the embankment has started to go, you know, right to, that's our guardrail, and it's put a cut there.
Yeah.
That it's made all of this out.
That's at the top of Van Martin, you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it's closer to the top.
On a turn.
On the turn.
Just below the turn.
On the turn, that's what's happening, is that the water obviously is just going off the road, and it looks like there was a channel there.
Well, there is a channel there.
But it's not staying in the channel.
Yeah, it is staying in the channel, but it's going right over the bank. It's just constantly in that one spot. The only thing we've ever done up there, that's, that takes the water from the top, right up where your driveway turns in. It takes that water from there to where it goes right there, just under those guardrails.
Right.
The only thing we've ever done there is a few years ago, we cleaned that up and we rocked it.
Right.
We tried to slow the water down.
Right.
That's the only work we've ever done on that.
Right.
So we didn't change any directions or anything like that.
Right, right.
And like I said, I've never been up there, I really never knew where this water went, because the bank's like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Gary did the other side and they dug that all out.
We dug that all out down there.
Really nice.
That runs good. And eventually right across from where this is, we want to dig that out and deepen that, because that's getting filled now too.
It is, yeah.
We took but all
you,
the...
You're talking about the basins at the bottom, the big stormwater basins at the bottom.
No, like when you first take that first one up the hill,
uh-huh.
They open up so much of it on the as you're going up at the right hand side.
Yeah, we were able to dig that all out because there's
nothing there.
And they fill it in with the stone.
And, but on the left hand side, they can't really do that, right?
Right.
Because at one time, these ditches are all made with stone. But
right.
The stones are using are this big.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening, they're getting filled up. This heavy rains are pushing them out. So what we did, the first section down there, from where that bottom pipe is, up to Oak Fort. We dug that all out, put big rocks in the bottom, and then put the smaller rocks on the side. That's holding the water good, but if you look at it, you'll see where it has moved some of our stone. So we're gonna go over the backhoe and push it back up. And then I wanna do the next section. Above Maple Court, the water was so strong it overflowed it and went down in that lady's basement right there on the corner of Maple Court.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not a lot.
Yeah.
She was happy. She's 83 years old. I went up and met with her.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what is going on with the one right below her then, and nobody's living there now.
No. So.
That doesn't matter. So.
Well, that's like the one house going down there on the right. I've never seen anybody ever live in that house.
Years. The old lady used to live there years. When I first moved there, I haven't seen anybody.
No.
Nothing.
But the trouble with is working on the side where we're having the biggest problem is.
Who do you get an estimate for that, though? To do the if you don't want to do the chute, we're not going to do the flume.
The engineer would give an estimate based on what the design looks like.
Yeah, he would have to design it and
give it out to somebody for bid.
So, well, he would give it to us and say, here's what our estimate is, and then you go take it to bid and you see what actually comes in on the bids.
Because it's a, I don't want to put our guys in that jeopardy when they get around.
Well, they let
the gas lines, the power lines.
Did Joe say that they would let us dump that right in the brook? We have to cut, we have to come short and rock line it.
Well, we would cut it short. There's ways around it.
Okay.
No, because the engineer is going to broke.
Because I don't think, because conservation is not going to let you go right to the brook.
No, you'd have to rock it.
Yeah, you'd have to line it.
There's one pipe down there already. Just below that bridge, that's going into Brook already.
And what I was going to tell you was, I mean, new road, new guardrail that was just put in on US Route 6 going to Homesdale, and they just paved it and put the guardrail in. Those last two storms, you can see the water go through the
stream. Yeah,
washed it right away. There's probably, I don't know, four and a half, 5 feet of stone that's missing from where
on the left hand side going into Homesdale at 6.
Yep.
I was up there the other day, saw that.
And that's just, and they just did that work last October.
Yeah, last October. Cleats off the road over on River Road, same thing.
So what?
Get them out.
Do you have any motion to see how much it's gonna cost for Kylie's to come up with a plan for this?
Well, he's working on it right now.
Yes, it's gonna be what it is, yeah.
Well, stormwater, last time I saw, and I haven't looked at the rules recently, but ARC funding can be used for stormwater improvements. So I think we might have found our project.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Hate to see you spend it that way.
Yeah, well.
You got to.
Well, I'm not sure what else, where else we could come up with.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Yeah, no, I think that that's.
Hi, Derek.
But,
But that's, we have a lot of other little washouts, 15, 20 feet here, 25, 30 feet here, but.
That's the one.
That's the one.
But this is the one. And that bottom pipe that Rachel just showed you, picture that eventually, that's gonna be a headache too. Because it's not going. I think there's a holding pond down there, but I'm not sure. Cause everything's grown up. And when I look on the property owner, the holding pond, if it is a holding pond, it's on the private property.
There's probably not an easement for it.
And there's probably not an easement for it.
Okay, I get it. We did things like that years ago.
Yeah, well. It was a lot of.
The area wasn't being utilized, it wasn't, wasn't in the way.
Like I said, yeah, a little more formal.
We did things.
That Milford, yeah.
And what Joe said.
Moon Valley Falls should never have been done the way it was.
No, never should have been done the way it was, and there's no way the township should have taken the roads.
No, the road should have never been taken.
Never should have been taken.
Nothing you can do about it.
I mean, when I came here, the road specs for the township to take over a road were basically nothing. So the first thing I pushed for the township to take any roads over, they had to meet PennDOT regulations. And if you look, that's what the new ordinance says.
Great.
Yeah.
Cause a few years ago, Randy.
Could have gotten stuck with the Toll Brothers one.
Well, for that long ago.
Keystone Park has been interested in having us take over their roads, but they don't meet the requirements, correct?
We have part of Keystone.
Part.
We go and go to the first road.
Right, yeah.
Into the cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And the rest is Westfall. Westfall took that over.
Yeah.
Westfall didn't take it.
Yeah, Westfall has the rest of it.
Yeah.
But a few years ago, Randy Miller, before he was moving out of here, I don't even know what it was, yeah, it was Randy, wanted me to take the rest of the roads up there. I said, well, the first thing you know, you're gonna core drill them roads. I wanna see what's in them roads. That's the last I ever heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
When I told him a 4-inch core drill, it was no more. Now, Schoolhouse Court, one of the property owners up there asked me if we'd be willing to take that over. I was up and looked at it, and if they put an overlay on to it, it wouldn't be much to do.
Do you think it would meet the requirements?
Yeah, yeah. But they do it, that, yeah, 2.5-inch overlay on to it.
Whatever happened to the folks that came here a couple of times wanting us to take their road?
Which road was that?
There was only like 7 or 8 of homes on the road.
That's Schoolhouse Court.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That road's basically flat with a cul-de-sac on the end, it's got 5 houses on it. There isn't even a driveway pipeline.
No. There's not that.
So, but.
Something to think about. Anything else?
No.
We talked a little bit about Kern Lane. We were talking about, Terry, the challenge of, you know, what happens if there's a fire back there and it's difficult or impossible to get a fire truck directly. Gary said he felt the fire truck could go around by old Malibu Trails, that what you said, Gary?
No. I know the utility truck has been all the way back. You went up there, Terry?
No, we would actually, well, drill, we're gonna do something for drill tonight and take the truck and see where we could get to because, you know, it was brought to our attention that it was a bad road up there, difficult. So it didn't work out though tonight, so I don't know.
Malibu Trail basically is at the end of Moon Valley Road.
Okay.
We're at Moon Valley Road, past, don't go into the development, but if you go right past it, it's gonna turn into a little, maybe a 9 or 10 foot wide dirt road. Tight.
Now that's going straight up, so you get to the end of Moon Valley. You don't go over Deep Brook and Ducks.
No, go straight up.
You go straight. I had returned a dog to a lady up there once.
Yeah, that's Malibu Trail. And as you're going back here, a couple hundred feet, what, 300-400 feet, there's a bridge to the right. That takes you to Kern Road, Kern Lane.
Okay.
No fire truck that you guys don't want to cross that bridge.
Right.
Number one, you can't make the turn.
Right.
Because it's real hard right and it's real hard left.
Anybody live there all winter?
Nobody lives back in there during the winter.
Oh, okay.
They might visit it if they get somebody plowed. Anybody that plows is out of mind.
But the house is vacant?
They're just cabins.
They're summer cabins.
Seasonal homes,
yeah. Malibu goes probably, I would say Malibu probably goes back in there 3/4 of a mile.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. It goes back in there a long ways.
I think I've only been kind of to the top in the first house on the right, and I walked it.
Yeah.
When I was returning a dog.
I felt like there was like dueling banjos when we went back there, and I said, I hope nobody comes out.
I know the utility trucks have been all the way back in Malibu, but.
Kern's a different story.
Kern, you're not getting.
No.
No.
All right, well.
But I think worst come to worst, if the brook was low, you could go, you could reach both of those houses that's over on Kern by crossing the brook, the hoses.
Okay.
If you had to, I believe.
All right. I have that on the agenda to discuss at our meeting, because we're concerned there. We're concerned down there by the Sock Hill.
Yes.
Where that bridge is out. I mean, we have... 26 has a UTV, I guess. So we go in over by Dave Ruby's house. There's some trail or something.
Yeah, you said you're back by Neslin's old.
Yeah, you can get over there. And we can get people out on that and then transfer them into an ambulance. But if there's a house fire,
forget it.
But there's gotta be a piece of property down there where Dave Ruby lives.
There is. It's Bob Neslin's old house, and they had given the easement to go across. It's somebody's driveway. That was his first house back there.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Dave Ruby about that.
Kessler's property comes right down there and borders that. And they're one of the people that's bitching about the all the time. Yep. They can build a road right through there, just like that.
But why would that homeowner want to do it? He never put it in the thing. And
I know.
Yeah, it's, you know. Yeah, okay, and I'll ask. I can't believe, isn't that what a USDA loan would be for, like that bridge?
It depends.
Okay. I didn't know. It was like,
I mean, you can get funding for bridges, but it's not easy.
No.
Well, no, basically, she's up there.
USDA would be looking for some kind of public entity to have ownership.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
That's the problem. Okay. Yeah. I didn't
that's
know.
Part of the problem.
I'm not real familiar with the grants. But
I mean, you can get DCED, you can get a grant for a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be a private landowner or a private association.
It just seems
to
send, but again, we don't get all
the subject, it's not easy.
But yeah. I just felt like there should have been something to do there.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so liability wise.
Oh, yeah.
To circle the conversation back.
It's a private road, so there's no liability on the township.
Even if
it's someone's driveway.
Fire can't get in there. Because it's considered, as a private road, it's considered someone's driveway.
It's their driveway.
Would that be true of any of the private developments?
Yeah.
So if the fire truck can't get in?
It's their problem, not ours. They maintain their roads.
And we don't have a responsibility to notify property owners. Well, that's where I want to get down the street to. What do we need to do, Tony? Yes. What do we need to do?
I think if the fire company goes up there and determines that they can't access it with firefighting equipment, then we need to let the owner know that the fire.
Well, I think it's multiple owners. I think property owns a section of that road.
Right, they've made that determination, and they may need to make improvements to the roadway and or the bridge if they want emergency medical services.
So there was a gentleman that was going to buy the one house that was like 105 quarter horse or something, and so his insurance company called us and said, how are you going to put fire out there? Because the bridge had a weight limit. And so I put Jeff or Mike Bellow in charge of that, and they called him back. I'm not quite sure.
The bridge had a weight limit, Terry. Now, whose bridge is it?
You're talking about the Sawkill.
Right?
Oh, I was talking about Sawkill.
No,
we're talking about her. Well, no, right, so that's a whole other thing that
we're not none of them have a fire insurance. There is none.
No, I don't think any of them will.
Well, that's on the agenda, because what are we going to do?
Yeah.
If that happens, like, what's the plan? That's why I suggested right away and said, hey, do you realize there's this issue up here? I called both chiefs, I texted both chiefs, and I said, there's an issue, there's a problem. Like, we have a part of our domain here that we're responsible for that we're not going to be able to get to.
Right.
And I said, God forbid, what are we going to do? We have to just going to stand there, you know?
Yeah, and just circling back, we should probably let them make the determination that they can't access the bridge. Once they give us that information, we could then notify the homeowners up there. I don't know who owns the bridge. I have a hunch, because I ran into this up in northern Wayne County one other time when there was a bridge access for the properties. The bridge went with the first property owner. So the first property owner might unwillingly own that bridge.
And he can charge a toll now.
Because I ran into that recently, actually, in the last 5 years up in Damascus.
Yeah. Except the rest probably have an easement to use that.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Access,
it's like a no-win situation.
But it's
nobody
the first person owns it, but they're all responsible for maintaining it.
Okay, so I guess what we're asking, Terry, is that after your folks go up there and assess what the capacity is or isn't, to please circle back with us and let us know if there's an issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This way we can notify homeowners and it might require, due diligence would require that we get the tax parcel ID numbers and I go to the courthouse and see who owns what and when the bridge was,
I can pull right up on GIS. I've got GIS.
Did you
got,
yes.
Out here right now.
Yeah.
I've already looked out.
Because that bridge is going to be a part of one of those properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know who built the bridge.
Yeah. Who built it?
The homeowner that I talked to.
Okay.
Oh, so he owns it.
Is that the first house?
No, it's the last house.
Last
really?
House. Oh, he built it.
He claims he built it. It's made out of old railroad.
Okay.
Tracks. Okay. That's what it's made out of. Most of it's old railroad tracks.
So it's part of the old railroad track.
I mean, it's built pretty strong, but I'm not taking the 22,000 pound backhoe across.
No.
And the turn is so sharp, for me to try to come out there with our Ford pickup, I got to pull around and back up to get.
Yeah.
That's how sharp the turn is.
But that's
with our Ford pickup.
That's crazy.
We'll get that.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. So to go back 1 second to Vandermark and Kern, do we need any kind of motion to support the engineer doing the
authorizing?
Is he doing the design?
Doing
are we going to design at this stage, or what are we authorizing him to do?
Design and estimate.
He has to design it, and then we have to put it out to bid.
Do we know how much the design is going to cost?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can we get an estimate from him on how much the design is going to cost?
I can call him and try.
Do we have to go with Joe, or could we go with John or one of our other engineers?
Well, I wouldn't call another engineer since I've already
been out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I've never had any issues with all the work I've done with Kylie. None of them are cheap, that's for sure.
Wow.
I'd like to have an estimate, but it is an emergency situation. So in light of the emergency, I would make the motion that we authorize Kylie to go ahead and give us a design for necessary repairs for Vandermark Drive. Both on an emergency basis and a long-term correction basis. And if they could please provide us with an estimate as soon as possible on how much the design will cost.
Yeah, I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye. And I will call Joe tomorrow.
And then we're going to need to take a hard look at whether the ARP funding can be used for the design or just for the actual improvements.
Yeah, that would be nice to be able to use both, because you can't get the improvements.
It would be,
the
but often programs don't do that, So
that's not my wheelhouse. Anything else?
No.
Okay. since I will not make you stay here.
Oh, it's fine. I was late, I had open house.
No, that's fine, like, but it's like,
we're gonna move you.
We're gonna move you to the top of the bus, how's that? Because it's very boring. The ambulance report from you?
Oh, this is Terry Christensen.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
I'm an EMT with the Milford Fire Department, I'm also the secretary, and I'm trying to work with the townships to ensure that everybody knows what's going on, and we're all on the same page.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So these calls are from July 2nd, right up until, I said the 20th, but when I was printing the calls to update them, you know, we had four calls this afternoon all at one time. So from that time period, from the 2nd of July until the, let's say the 19th of September, we've had 263 calls. Of those calls, 227 have been on paid time. 36 calls, pardon me?
What does that mean?
Oh, that means, so the Milford Fire, the ambulance is in service from 7 in the morning until 7 at night, 5 days a week.
With
Monday through Friday, with a paid EMT and driver.
Are we currently at 5 days a week, Terry?
We just stopped. I couldn't get a hold of Jeff today to find out the exact. I think it might be 2 weeks now that we haven't been paid on the weekend.
So they answer the call, but it's not paid for?
No. So what they mean is that instead of having volunteers man the ambulance, we have paid personnel, so that there's someone there, it's their job to go out on the ambulance call.
Okay.
So we are
so
guaranteed
covered,
to have, right, the ambulance is definitely going out
mm-hmm.
for those calls.
Right.
Terry, we're running that many calls in Westfall then?
Westfall was a big hit this time.
Yeah, I see that.
This month, which was, strange. Because 19, which is port, has a 19, 1 and 2, and so a lot of the time I hear them call their second ambulance out of service. And what Port Jervis does is they do a lot of transports.
Yeah.
We don't do that. We just answer the call. We don't, you know, for the hospital that, you know, they'll call and say, hey, can you take someone back to Belle Reve? Or we don't do that. We don't take ourselves out of service to make a transport unless it's an emergency 911 call.
Right.
So it seems like when the 19 is supposed to cover the Westfall area, they have the one ambulance, and so they've been busy, so then we're gonna get called in as the second. But yeah, I sat and did it all, you know, I do it periodically, and then at the day that I come here, I kind of put everything, you know, on this paper. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of calls that we did over there in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was busy, real busy.
22 of them.
Yeah. So on volunteer time, we attended to, there were 36 calls that came in while we were on volunteer time. So overall transports, we transported, seems like there should be, transports and the RMAs, that's where it comes into. So transporting is when we actually get on scene and we take someone to the hospital or to a landing zone. On the end column is an RMA.
Mm-hmm.
RMA means we physically get the call, we go to the house, you know, the person's dying when you get there, and then all of a sudden they don't want to go anywhere, so they refuse medical assistance.
Oh,
so 60, so that's 90, you know, or 86 transports, 60 RMAs, which is hard to get called out there because, for instance, today, I don't know if you heard the pager go off, but we had four calls at one time. So we had a gas leak on Bennett Avenue, which of course the ambulance goes in case something happens. But we also at that point had an assault, and there were like two other calls. So I think that they left the gas leak and they went and they attended to like the Oak Manor call or the Oak Ridge Drive call or something. There was an assault and there was a general illness. So we had Port was out, we were out, and I think Dingman's attended to one of the calls. It got to be, we had four things happen at one time. And normally, now all of a sudden, that's what's happening. I can't figure it out, but I, like, as soon as one paid, one you know, the pager goes off and you hear one department go. I said, oh, we better get ready because we're going to go. And nine times out of ten, you know, we're called right there with them.
So an RNA means you go to this residence or wherever this incident is going on and the people say, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, so say you weren't feeling good. And sometimes people get anxious when they don't feel good. So their heart pounds or they get dizzy or sweat.
They decide not to be
transported. Yep, so then I get there and I check you out. Yep, okay, and I say to you, hey, your blood pressure is okay. It's there. Your heart's pounding. I think you're a little anxious. I wait 5 or 8 minutes. I take it again. And if they've calmed down and are feeling better, then they'll say, okay, I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
So we don't transport them. We just kind of hang out for about 10
minutes. And what is a QRS?
QRS is, it's called quick response, meaning we're either in service and we don't have any volunteers to take the ambulance to a call, or our ambulance is already on a call, and because we don't have a second ambulance, they have to dispatch a different department to cover that call.
So that's a switch from one department to another, but it's still responded to.
Yep, okay, they're still responded to, absolutely. But not necessarily by us. So 60 times we have been called to go on a call, but we were either unavailable because we were already busy, or we're unavailable because of the volunteer shortage.
Oh, okay.
So I have a DOANT. So a DOA, unfortunately, is when someone passes away. And this, in this couple of weeks here, this six weeks or so, we've had 7 calls with people. Now, those calls are difficult because when we get called to the house, it's a process. So now I get there. So my neighbor had passed on a Saturday morning. I knew it was 105 Kiesel. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, cardiac, I gotta go. I jumped, threw on my sweatsuit, drove in my personal vehicle to the scene. The ambulance came up. By the time we get there and you're doing CPR, and while 2 people are doing CPR, you're trying to figure out, is there a DNR? You know, what are we doing? Protocol states we have to do 20 minutes of quality CPR on scene, listening to the AED, before you can say, we're going to call medical command and tell them what's going on, how many shocks were advised. Then, he'll either say, okay, you know, you're going to transport, which is a good thing. And if you're not going to transport, he says cease and desist. You know, we're writing down the time, we're filling out the report, and then we call the coroner. We cannot leave that residence until the coroner gets there. Now, depending on what Chris and Kevin are doing, it could be, sometimes we're sitting there 2 hours. So that these calls take the ambulance out of service for quite some time. And I'm not complaining. I just want you guys to know that it's a time consuming, and then sometimes you can't go until the state police get there if it's a suspicious call. So, you know, when my neighbor passed away, it was at 9:30 and I didn't get home, and I live, you know, 400 yards down the road. I got home at 12. By the time Chris comes up and does his examination quick there, then he meets with the family, and then, you know, you have to help him. You have to help him prepare the body for transport to his vehicle. So sometimes it's crazy timing, you know? I've only had like 1 or 2 occasions where it's been real quick. But most times, you know, I've had an overdose where I was there 4 hours.
Are you quick in New Jersey, was it?
No. No, I was there too. No, that was it. No, and every experience is so different, but nope, they're not. And
no, Jersey's medical examiners are in no rush.
Nope. We were there, we were in Sussex over the summer. We had the ambulance out of service. I think it was almost four and a half hours.
They sat on the river back with a body in a boat for over 4 hours waiting for a medical examiner.
Terrible. Isn't it just?
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, then you've got the family pacing back and forth, and I'm thinking, you feel bad. There's their loved one, and I've covered them with a sheet, and I'm trying to keep them, you know, can I just sit and talk with them? Well, of course you can, but it's just so hard. It's just so hard. So we've had 8 of those, actually. So we have 3 in Dingmans, 2 in the borough, and 1 in Shohola, and 1 in Sussex, actually. And then canceled 18 times. So we've gotten in the ambulance and we've gone on our way, and we're about halfway there, and you'll get canceled because sometimes an ambulance, and this is how it happens. So we'll be going to Westfall, and Port Jervis will be dropping off the patient at the Bon Secours, and they know we're on our way, and they drop off their patient real quick and get back in the ambulance, call available, cancel 33. So
what does that mean, they're replacing somebody who's on the way?
Yeah. So that means, so Milford would be going to Westfall to pick up somebody who wasn't feeling well. Port Jervis ambulance covers Westfall. So if they become available before we get there,
right,
they call us and say, oh, no, no, we've got this.
Okay.
And away we go. Now, of course, we as a QRS would do the same thing in our area, especially in our coverage area. If we were available, we knew we could get there. But we got a nasty gram stating that, you know, that was frowned upon that we're doing that. So we don't do that anymore. If we're QRS, we're QRS. The only time that we don't do that is when it's a fire call and a vehicle accident. And we have a house full of people. I always try to go, you know, because you
have to go anyway. There could be more than one ambulance
needed. Right, and you could need more than one. So at that point, when I get to the firehouse, I call the comm center and let them know 33 ambulance is in service and will be, you know, attending this call. Please cancel 26 with our thanks. They don't like that either, but it's our area. We have the people that cover it. I know they have people sitting there ready to jump on the ambulance and go, but we're obligated to do that. And if we can get the people out, I want to get us out. I don't want to be a QRS if we don't have to be, you know.
Are most of these numbers representative of the population of that area? Doesn't necessarily have to be, because I now am understanding that you can switch, you can bring someone from out of the area into an emergency situation, but the numbers mostly represent the population of that area, being that like the borough has a smaller population than Demons, for instance, right? But the borough has
two. Well, the township has a slightly larger population than the borough,
but
the borough
has no.
This is only Milford Borough. This is only Milford Borough's police, so they're not going to be going down to Delaware very much, but Dingman's is pretty close, so that they can see more.
Well, Dingman is part of their natural
coverage. We have a large area of Dingman's that we cover naturally, so I call that our homeland. So we are responsible. We're first due in to many areas in Dingman's.
Quite a few calls in Chihuahua too, right?
I try to take the gamut there, I have to be honest. We really do our best. We do our best not to miss any calls anywhere.
Yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good.
But it just seems like, you know, the Chihuahua, it's us or Dingman's. And I guess, you know, then Lackawaxen comes from that other side.
Lackawaxen don't want to go there at all.
I hear there's some... I met with Mr. Oliger, Jason Oliger, because he wanted some more specific information from me regarding the calls that we do in Chihuahua. Do I transport? Did I not transport? Where did I go? I can't even think. So I sat with him just so I was sure what he was looking for, because I want to give him what he's looking for. And he brought up the fact that, you know, Lackawaxen is giving him a hard time, and he told me to be careful if we wanted to take over all of Chihuahua. And I said, I don't ever recall stating that Milford wanted to take over all of Chihuahua. We're doing what I thought was our due diligence, you know, and what we were supposed to do. If we get called, we go, and if we don't get called, we don't go. You know, this is all new to me, so I know some things, and I'm learning more things, thankfully, but I'm still green around the edges when it comes to questions and answers. And when he was asking, or said that to me, I thought, oh, maybe I missed him. Maybe, you know, someone else was having a conversation and letting it know, like, Milford wants to take all of that, because I'm thinking, no, we just want to be as effective as we can, and, you know, whatever information he was looking for, I thought, okay, let me just make sure it's square and straight. I don't want to be the butt of any jokes like I was, you know, at the Dingman Township meeting. I didn't like that. So
do we have so many volunteers because there are not enough people willing to train to be paid?
Our department started as purely volunteer, purely volunteer. And what had happened when COVID hit, many of our volunteers were 65 or older and simply just decided that they had been in the department 30 to 35 years. They didn't want to be exposed to COVID. They didn't want to take a risk. So they...
That's what instituted building a paid staff.
Correct.
Right, so we had coverage for our community, absolutely.
And the county took some of your members out and let them run.
Yeah, right.
Anyone who worked for the county was...
Anybody who worked for the county.
Right.
Yep, and that's what happened to a lot of departments. It depend, you know, I technically wasn't supposed to run the ambulance because I was at school. And they were like, you can't, if you get COVID, it's on your time. So it's hard. I was volunteering my time. So it's hard, but all the firemen are not paid. It's just the ambulance crews are paid. The fire department is completely volunteer, the firemen.
Totally.
100%. Okay. Absolutely.
But they don't have a problem though getting volunteers, do they?
No, but you know what, we're recruiting, we have a core group of 8 to 10 kids, guys, yeah. You know, 30-ish.
Yeah.
You know, I think my son's the youngest. Jake will be 20. So let's say 20 to 35. We have 8 guys.
What a nice
and
man he is.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
But they really, like, they hang out down there Friday night, mm-hmm. So they're there. They hang out there Saturday, so they're there.
Yeah.
So our response time and our crew numbers has been amazing. And we're tracking that as well. So it's encouraging to see. But, you know, the older guys just don't, you know, and so be it. They put in your time.
Mm-hmm.
But Milford's it's a small area where, you know, you're either, you know about it or you don't. You either want to do it or you don't. But it's a lot to volunteer. I mean, the training, the first year of the training I never saw Jake the first year. I mean, to get his firefighter one and his ropes course and... He was gone every night of the week, and I thought, my goodness gracious, you know, now it was in school, and now he's trying to hold down, you know, the job and the training. Mm-hmm. But to see them, get there and the way they work together in such a cohesive group is so encouraging, and it's so exciting. You know, they love to do what they do. They love to get there. They love to get on the truck. I just passed them going up the hill tonight going to the training center for... They had to go to the training center rather than go up to... I said, we have to go investigate this area. I want you to take your chief's vehicle, not a truck. I want you to go up, and I want you to walk it in the daytime here while we have light, and I want you to see what it is we're talking about. Because, you know, apparently we're not going to be able to get up here with a piece of apparatus. And nor should we put ourselves in a situation to where we have a trouble, but yet, you know, we need to let our people know what's going on.
Well, Milford Township... very much appreciates all the work that you did.
And well, thanks.
We have a
happy
whole
to
department.
Do it.
Whole department. We have a plaque.
Oh.
To take back to them.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's so sweet.
Take back to the firehouse.
To the firehouse.
I will.
Because we truly do appreciate all
that
you
do. Oh, my gosh, you give me the chills.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank
we're happy to serve our community.
We don't have a camera here.
Power, so thank you so much. We're going to love that.
So...
Well, it gives us great pride.
Of course
we do.
Of course
we feel good.
Chris is in here.
Chris is in here.
No one's here.
Chris
yeah.
is away. Yes.
How
no
is that
reporters
what it is
today?
Okay. No reporters.
No reporters. No.
Oh, that's nice. So
awesome. Thank you. Thank
you
so much.
Thank you.
You know, hanging the firehouse and all.
Yeah,
that.
Because we just had the bathroom painted actually, so we're starting to put all the stuff back up on the wall. So that's definitely going right up there. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. We do appreciate it.
We have not heard a thing about the next ambulance meeting being scheduled yet. But I think looking at the numbers, you know, the question is,
let's hold it, put in a little bit of luck.
That's part of the conversation, I think, or to be doing something so that their calls are being covered.
Mm-hmm.
I know that at the Westfall board, according to my favorite reporter, at one point they had a significant discussion about the lack of response that was happening from their departments compared to the number of calls that they had. But I hadn't heard whether there was any solutions put forward to make changes to that. And I know that, you know, there was a conversation with Dingman about breaking their numbers out into what was the Dingman Township area versus what was your regular area.
I have that too. I just got So I wanted to put that out for you guys. I have it written down by call. Like I went in and I'll look quick, but yep. So when they come at me with that, I'll say, well, you know, yep, this is where we were. This is how it happened.
Well, I mean, when you look at the rough numbers here, there's a lot more response happening in terms of the calls in Dingman versus in Milford Borough or Milford Township.
Well, Dingman's a big township.
It's a big township.
It is.
It is. And the fire department takes a big section.
Yeah. But the, you know, the question that I think that we have been on our side of the table challenged with is what is the fair share?
Yep.
And how do we figure that out?
Well, when you look here, I mean, we're looking here on total calls, Westfall has 13%, we've got 16%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Westfall's not contributing.
Yep.
They actually have a higher percentage of calls than we do. And Chihola has is right there with them.
Right, Chihola's right there with them.
Right there.
We actually had two more today up there that I didn't add on.
Right there. I do have one other.
I got them today.
Mm-hmm. One other question about: do you have a sense when we have paid staff available of how much of their time is spent on readiness activities versus being out on calls? Because I know this. Like pay-per-call thing has been talked about. And one of the problems with that, from my perspective, is the readiness cost is something that doesn't get contributed to that way. But I just want to have an idea. Do you have a sense of when the paid guys are on? Are they just out all the time? Or, you know, do they have downtime that we have no choice? I mean, that's the only way to have it happen,
yeah.
That we're paying for readiness.
They're in the firehouse, so if they're in a call, at a call, they're out, and then they come back, and then, so the next hour after that is going over the rig, cleaning it, because it's disinfected completely, and then replacing the supplies that we have, locking everything back up, so other than that, they're sitting and, you know, and waiting, so whether we're, but while they're sitting there, Kyle puts out a continuing education. So Kyle's always pushing you to continue to know the latest of everything. So you have to take these credits. You have to, and they're like 40-minute classes that you take online, and they're like videos that you watch and slideshows. But there's a test you have to take after each of them. But I mean, there is time that they're sitting there watching TV, absolutely. But he does try to keep everybody up to date and you're working. But I know after every call, I mean, I worked all summer and I thought, oh my gosh, like I just cleaned the ambulance. But every time you have someone in there, I mean, it virtually has to be disinfected. You can't take a chance this today with what things that are going on, you just can't. So that takes a while. So, I mean, we're there and we're ready, but it's not, let's say there were no calls during that day. It's not like they're just sitting around loafing, watching TV. I mean, they're doing the education.
But those are fixed hours, right?
The yep, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Something
p.m.
to something.
Yep, right. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
Yes,
sure. It absolutely
yeah.
is.
It absolutely is. Yeah, and it does. You're right.
Yeah.
And I did speak to Kyle regarding the information I had sent out. I do not have new numbers from him yet regarding another scenario. I asked him for a couple more scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, we're not quite there. I said, so if you could give us a couple more scenarios, he said he would kind of do that. It took him a couple weeks last time to put it together. So as soon as I have it, you know, I'll make sure that everybody gets it so we can look it all over. But yeah, so that's what we do. I mean, we do sit there. And like I said, we go over the ambulance, there's continuing education, there is sitting around watching Channel 3, yep, I'm not going to lie, you know, but we're cleaning the firehouse at that point too, like there's a chore list to do, there's charting to do, there's a lot of stuff that gets done, so, you know, you're really not
sitting around.
You're busy. Mm-hmm. 12 hours does go quick. I didn't think it would. I kept thinking, oh my gosh, this is really going to be a long day, but it wasn't. And there are days that you have 4 or 5 calls a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to check out at 7, but you still have 2 hours worth of paperwork to do. You know, yeah. So it's, but it depends, you know. And I'm pretty sure that the wintertime, it's going to be real busy because the cars and the snow, and that's always a busy time for us. Mm-hmm. Summer and then yeah. Winter. Spring and fall seem to just kind of...
The acorns are falling like crazy.
Yeah.
These hours represent the COVID okay. situation compared to prior to the onset of COVID, or have the numbers always been like this?
No, those numbers are pretty much average.
Yeah.
As what they've always
prior
been.
To,
we're always,
right.
we've been a very
busy... We have enough of our accidents and normal
yeah.
emergencies.
Been a
bit, yep.
Yeah, we've
okay.
always been a busy department. Mm-hmm. And the Belle Reve keeps us busy as well. And it comes in spurts. You know, we could be there every day of the week, sometimes twice a day, and then everything seems to settle down, and then it'll start back up again.
Now, do the nursing homes pay for those? Do they pay directly for those services, or are they just provided as part
nope,
of
them? Nope, they're part of our coverage area, so when
okay.
they have a patient that needs our help, we pick them up and take them over, and each patient is billed individually.
There's a new one built there. Yeah.
Right, so Phyllis, for example, their Medicare would pay. The patient, the Belle Reve patient's Medicare would pay the department.
And then that goes into the kitty here.
That goes to the department. So that's been part of the conversation is about how that all works. But the department collected that money before. They use it to buy the ambulance. The last payment that they made was $61,000 on the ambulance. It goes for the supplies, like Gary was talking about, whether they're the, you know, the EpiPens,
right, as a base support for the whole service, right?
Right.
As
the
opposed
gas,
to attached to one individual. I hear you.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry. I will do like I did the last time with this report and scan just the chart
and
email it to the group.
Thank you.
So that the rest of the municipalities have it as
thank
well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm a little surprised, frankly, that you know there's a pretty high percentage of calls in Westfall and Chihuahua.
Yeah.
And you know, one contributes, but
one doesn't.
Well, Westfall, I think Westfall last year did what we did, and
right.
they used the federal money to pay for Jervis.
Right.
But at the first of the year, when the federal money wasn't there anymore. They stopped.
Right.
And they just expect them to do
now,
it.
And what did you say when
well,
one
I
pays for and one doesn't? What were you comparing? Chihuahua
and Westfall.
Yeah.
What Westfall's, my understanding is Westfall's department was telling the municipality they didn't need that support anymore.
Right.
That they were going to be responding, that they had the capacity to respond. But that has not materialized.
Yeah, and 16% of the calls to the Milford ambulance was from Westfall.
Yeah. So there's a need to engage them in the conversation of what is your plan, because
it sounds like they have a plan, but I kind of think they're like biding their time.
Mm-hmm.
Why they're getting it for free now?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I don't
this
know.
Is
unless
the, this
push
is
the
struggle.
Shovel, I don't know.
This
yeah.
is the struggle that Blooming Grove had.
Mm-hmm.
This is the struggle that Lehman and Tafton were having when we were not paid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And our people were calling Dingman and Tafton and Blooming Grove for support. Prior to us implementing the paid,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the federal money last
yeah.
year,
yeah.
right? So, you know, it's a moving
mm-hmm.
game here where we're trying to glue enough pieces together.
Yeah.
And they have a really
yeah, just
big budget.
As a follow-up to what Terry said before, I live less than half a mile from the Tafton Firehouse. So I can tell you from my own visual experience of going past it 3 or 4 times a day, that they're either out or disinfecting.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Your hands get sick. I wear gloves, but sometimes I'm just like,
I've never seen my kid.
Yeah.
The poor guy likes to have a cigarette once in a while. He doesn't even have time to stand outside and have a cigarette anymore.
Yeah. Now they're really busy up
yeah.
there.
They're
busy.
Very,
very
busy.
Yeah.
I see Lehman Township's going to build a room.
Really?
Yep.
That's what I
understand. That was just recently in the paper, right?
Yep.
Something new.
Well, Damon's wants to build an ambulance house up there, right there at Bridge Road and Route 6.
Yeah.
And at that point, they want to take over all, they told us.
They want to take over all Dingman.
All of Dingman's and all of Shahola.
Well, Lehman is a township.
Yeah, Lehman's going to start to run down to Grandma's Court.
Okay.
They've already put the tree down.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you very much, Terry. I will see you next month.
Moving onward, zoning, I'm sure Sean is not.
Nobody's on.
Nobody's on. Public participation number one. Secretary's report.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Bye, Terry.
Thank you.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Mr. Mrozinski wrote that Pike County Office of Community Planning is requesting funding from the Scenic Rural Character Preservation Program, planning funding to partially fund updates to the Pike County Comprehensive Plan.
To what? Which comprehensive plan?
Our comprehensive plan.
How?
That's going to be in the next thing, yeah.
Mr. Mrozinski sent his this correspondence about SRCP grant. He asked to send scope of work and budget so that the process could be started. Michelle Long from Pike County Conservation District informed that the grant workshop registration is open. The solicitor sent conditions for the approval of conditional use application of UGI. Mr. DeLorenzo informed Tim Knapp that there are two major areas hit hard by the storm. Rachel Hendricks forwarded the email and link from Ms. Christensen regarding 2022 costs for paid ambulance services. Mr. DeLorenzo forwarded a correspondence about IDA damage, and it's from Timothy Knapp. Douglas Orner introduced the Professional Recyclers of Pennsylvania. Joseph Dooley discussed about DVES contract for Milford Ambulance 2022. Rachel Hendricks wrote that, informed Tetra Tech that current road situation is going to result in a hazard mitigation project. Jessica Yoder informed about a guided nature walk at one of the properties funded through SRCP program. It was on the 19th. Board of Hickory Hills Estates sent a new request to use the parking lot instead of the meeting room. I received a certificate of liability insurance for Port Jervis Electric. Patty Combe from Pike County Second Amendment Sanctuary asked to get on the agenda for the October 4th supervisors meeting.
Who did?
Patty Combe from Pike County Second Amendment Sanctuary. Okay. Rachel Hendricks wrote that the resolution they provided us is quite different from what was passed in Dingman Township.
Yeah, it was.
So Donna Bloom, from the Secretary Treasurer of Shahola Township, sent convention minutes from 2019. Brian Snyder sent Pike County Road Task Force agenda and minutes. I received 2021 proposed bylaws changes, nominations report, and resolutions from PZACS. Ken Corcoran from Pike County Historical Society and Museum asked to renew the membership. And I received some correspondence from Vito DiBiase, and that's all.
Okay, can we agree that my emails that I copied the office on are not correspondence for future?
Yeah.
So unless there's something that I'm sending that in and of itself needs to be on the correspondence, Sean, you don't have to include my emails, okay?
All right.
And Shahana, that letter I sent you was for purposes of sending UGI a letter.
Okay.
Okay,
we have all business. We have the SRCP grants, which you were talking about. So, Mr. Mrozinski.
Mike wants a scope of work and a budget. So, I don't know.
Who was the one gentleman that said he would help us with it? Brian, was his name?
The guy from Alta?
Brian Snyder?
No, Brian Snyder is the county planning office. That's Mike's guy.
I thought that they might have a scope, I wouldn't imagine a scope of work is that complicated on a comprehensive plan, but I suppose.
Revision for the comprehensive plan?
I suppose it depends on how many meetings you want them to host here, or how many, you know, workshops and how, you know, it's how much content we're looking for. Perhaps we can get some assistance from the gentleman at LTAP.
Okay.
Who came out and did the workshop for Bob. Off the top of my head, I'm not remembering his name.
Really, for your comprehensive plan, I don't think you need any more than two public meetings.
I don't think we need a phenomenal amount of, you know, things in the scope of work.
No.
I wonder if we could get a copy of the scope of work from the boroughs. And perhaps look and see if it could be scaled up.
Ask the council president for a copy.
I will ask Frank.
Milford Borough did this just recently.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
And they used scenic rural character preservation funds to do it.
There you go.
And we should probably set a budget.
And I believe, I might be wrong, but when you broach the subject with your counterpart at the borough, I'm almost thinking that Brian Snyder from Mike's office wrote the scope of work for them.
So do you think that perhaps all that he's really looking for is for us to respond back and
maybe
say,
can you help us out?
Can you help us build a scope of work that you think would be reasonable for a township of our size?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that's what they do.
So what are we asking him to do? Give us a
put together
book.
A scope of work. For us to put an RFP.
To comprehensive plan.
To update the comprehensive plan. Yes.
Well, our comprehensive plan is ancient, isn't it?
No, it's not that old. It's about 13 years old. So it's supposed to be done every 10
years.
We're only about three behind. So,
yeah. So that's not bad.
It's all right. I've seen some other 25 years old. Like,
you've seen worse, right?
And as far as the budget, I mean, that's something that Mike is probably not going to answer. You know, I don't really do that.
20 to 25?
Okay.
I would think that's.
I think it was 20 to 25 was the last time when I heard it. Yeah.
Okay. That's what most of the bids came in at.
Yeah.
20 to 25 thousand dollars.
So do we need a motion to set the budget at that amount and ask Mike for?
I would make a maximum budget.
Not to
maximum of 25.
Not to exceed 25. I think they'd pay a little bit more.
But we should be able to get a grant for that.
Well, that's what we're going through the rural character preservation process.
No, I know that, but I'm saying there's no reason to go. 25,000 should be.
Should be more than
yes.
Yeah, it's a small township.
Absolutely. Indeed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's such a waste anyway.
I mean, the boroughs was like 24,000, I think.
The boroughs is a pretty complex plan with lots and lots of bells and whistles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe we should go for the $15,000 Plain Jane one.
Well, here's what I think. I think we should make sure the RFP gets in the hands of a wide variety of consultants, not just people who are looking to charge us what we set the budget at.
Right.
I mean, so I would ask that Mike's office, if they're going to put together the RFP for us, but they needed these two pieces, if they not tell them what the budget is.
Correct.
So that they can just look at the scope of work to determine what they think would be a reasonable price.
So do you want to just, can we just pass it without putting in any number and just push it to them and not
Well, I think
say,
they want to know what
you
want.
You say not to exceed, they're going to make that not to exceed.
In other words, what he writes or what comes in at the scope of work, they could say to us, okay, well, if you want us to have, you know, a three-day retreat, and you want us to do a public awareness campaign, and you want us to do, you know, 100-page glossy documents, you know what I'm saying? What you're asking from them helps generate what the price is. So
I'm working on another one elsewhere, and the consultant has had three Zoom meetings. Open Zoom meetings, and then one private meeting with the Board of Supervisors. And the plan...
That might be a little short.
And the plan is like 223 pages.
That's a pretty big plan.
Yeah.
That is way too
And
big.
It was like 20,000.
Yeah, I think we're looking for easily understandable and concise as compared to.
The thing about the plan though is.
Monumental and highly detailed.
Yeah, you have to include all those things from your zoning and everything else, so it's like.
So you're talking about with the addendums?
Yeah, with the addendums, it's like 2023.
I don't like the sewer plan.
Right.
Okay, so we want to tell Mike at a maximum of $25,000, please do not circulate the number that we're, you know, looking for clear and concise, and if you could help us with the scope of work. We would like to take a look perhaps at what the borough submitted.
Right.
Your last Frank for what the borough submitted, and we'll get back to him on a specific scope of work. Do we need a motion? Okay, so.
Yeah, because you're just to set the scope.
Just to set the scope.
I make a motion that we respond back to Mike Marcinski at the county and let him know that our budget is a maximum of $25,000, and that we are, we would like to look at the borough's scope of work from their recent comprehensive plan, and we would appreciate his assistance in developing a scope of work to get a concise and relatively simple
comprehensive
plan update.
I will second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
How interested do you think the residents of the township are in getting involved in the comprehensive?
Hey, Phyllis, look around.
I'm here. No, but I thought there had been quite an expression of interest earlier on.
That's all I wonder, something controversial going on.
That's all.
That's the only time.
Like the sewer plant and stuff like that.
That's all.
Yeah,
when there's something big going on,
it's all boring like this stuff, and nobody's interested.
Well, I think that folks don't necessarily understand how the creation of a comprehensive plan.
How it affects.
Becomes the future of their community and how they can help to connect the dots. You know, I think that's part of it. People always seem to have a lot that they'd like to say, but that doesn't mean that they want to engage
and do
participating in meetings and things of that nature. And a lot of people are just afraid to be seen speaking out, you know, so sometimes that comes into play. I know I've had a number of people who said to me, well, I'll come to an XYZ hearing, but I don't want to talk. You know, I can't speak in front of people.
Yeah.
You know, so some of it is that, and some of it is people's apathy. They don't think that their voice will make a difference, so they don't, you know, they don't come forward. But this is something we're required by law to do, and we should do it to the best of our community's ability to have a, you know, bright and well-rounded future. And
Lauren, Hickory Hills Estate, all we're going to do is make a motion. They wanted to change the request to the parking lot because of the COVID increase.
I'll make a motion. We approve the Hickory Hills using the parking lot on September 30th.
I will second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, 2022 budget preparation. Fun thing. I can't believe it's here already again.
I asked Shamana to put this on the agenda because of the new agenda rules. I think that we should devote our next two workshops to looking at a draft budget and ask Shahana to start with her internal preparation of a draft budget for next year. And let's officially look at the budget at the next two workshops.
That sounds wonderful.
Would there be handouts for attendees?
Yeah, anything that's being handed to us should be available to the public, right? But it has to be understood that it's not a final budget. It's just
no, but it's a workshop. You're supposed to.
So you can follow the conversation.
There you go. Thank you. I think that would be appreciated.
Okay, to reimagine Appalachia Coalition.
I make a motion that we table the Reimagine Coalition. Thank you for the presentation that was presented today. We asked for additional information, and we'll wait till review it.
Okay. COVID-19 protocol.
That motion needs to be seconded.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'm still trying to figure out what it does.
Thank you.
Me too.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And who exactly is behind it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Like, okay.
Okay, COVID-19 protocols. I asked Shahana to put this item on the agenda with the numbers the way that they are. And given some of the requests we've had for upcoming public participation, I think that we should have masks required anytime that we have more than one person in a room.
Ugh.
I know it's not fun. I don't think it's fun, but I don't want to see us have any of our personnel get sick. And I don't want to see us have a super spreader event at one of our meetings.
Well, I mean, are you going to separate the chairs and our business as well?
Well, this is kind of as separated as I think we were prepared to be. We can go a little bit more than that, but we just won't fit people in here. I do understand that one group that had as many as 40 people participate in some meetings is now down to about 2.
Whereabouts? Just anywhere?
Other municipal meetings.
Ah, okay.
But it's a group that's making their rounds to all of the local municipalities. So I believe they went from 40 participants down to 2. Mm-hmm. So it may not be a big crowd when they get here, but I do think that perhaps masks required might be in the best interest. But I'm only one person, so what do you guys think? I mean, I'm concerned for the safety of our people. It's not fun. I don't appreciate wearing a mask, and I don't want to do it all day at work at my job either. But I don't want to see us have anybody get sick, and I especially don't want to see any of our employees made vulnerable by public participation in one of our meetings.
I'd like to see masks, personally.
We'll put yours on.
No, you got it. It doesn't work
well,
if you don't put it on.
Well, she's 6 feet away from us, yeah.
So, I am not a big mask proponent, but Gary, that's up to you.
And it's tough. I mean, if the school kids have to wear it all day, why shouldn't you?
Well, that's questionable, too. I mean, look what's happening there. That's ridiculous.
Well, it's now an edict from the state government that the students have to wear it, so whether we like it or not. But for what happens in this building, Tony, is it at our discretion?
It is.
So how are you going to go?
I'm not making a motion.
How do you feel, Gary?
I don't like masks, but I don't know.
Shahana, how do you feel as our staff member present today? Do you feel at risk when you're at our meetings?
No, I don't feel that way.
I don't feel at risk sitting here at our meeting because I've been inoculated.
Right.
But if you got a huge attendance for a budget meeting and all of a sudden the room filled up,
Can you come up with another way? You probably should have a little more separation in your seating than you presently do.
Okay. So if you can come up with another way to say this, I will wear a mask if we have a fill. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the problem is that when we arrive, we don't know how many people are going to travel in behind.
Well, come with a mask so you can go either way depending on the attendance.
I always have a mask with me.
Yeah. Oh, I think we have 5,000 of them behind.
Yeah, we do.
So
I spent my weekend in Atlantic City, and you spent your day in New York City.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
the only reason I had a mask on today because I was in the hospital for special surgery and I had to wear a mask.
And that is pretty much the same with the people who come in our door.
Yeah.
If we tell them they have to wear
a mask,
they'll wear a mask. If they're afraid, really afraid, they can participate via Zoom, but certain groups will not use Zoom. And we could have, we have Mr. DiBiase telling us he's going to have loads and loads of people coming down whenever we have that public hearing.
Which one is that?
That is the water protection ordinance that the Planning Commission is still working on.
Just a note on that. I mean, if the Planning Commission hasn't forwarded to the supervisors yet, I don't think that we should be commenting on this ordinance until we see it.
Right.
and I tried to make that clear last month, and somehow he wrote letters about me anyway. So,
and that seems to be Mr. DiBiase's way. I don't know if you saw the 2 communications that we received from League of Women Voters.
I did.
Position were they taking?
They're not.
None.
They were listed in Mr. DiBiase's emails as an ally in an organization that was willing to to bring out the pitchforks and demand that we have the ordinance the way that he suggests that it should be. But in fact, they have taken no position on the ordinance. They will not even consider reviewing the ordinance when it is not out for a public comment period.
That's right.
And they repeatedly advised Mr. DiBiase that they would not and could not be considered an ally and should not be referred to in that way, in any way, shape, or form. And yet, it happened. So we received apologies, basically, from both the local league and the state league.
Clarifying that.
Clarifying their position, which is that they do not have a position. So I'm not surprised that you were misrepresented in that way, Tony.
I'm shocked.
It is what it is, and you know, this is part of sitting at this table, unfortunately.
That's it.
Unfortunately. Okay, so COVID-19 protocols, what we want to do is just try to keep the seating. What happens if we get more people than will fit in our spread out seating?
Well, then
we can't prevent them from coming in.
We can't stop them coming in, but we also have to have some rules and regulations regarding where they can stand and things of that nature. I mean, it's like, what are you going to do if you get 50 people?
Yeah.
50 people are not going to fit in here, no matter how many chairs you have.
You know, I'm going to a zoning meeting, you know, to that training for the working poles. And I can't remember whether that's a mask meeting or not. And I mean, those training sessions are packed. But I know the seats are way spread out. It's held in a huge room.
Let me think about this COVID one.
Well, that might be something that we need to look at if we expect to have a large public participation.
You may want to move your meeting.
Maybe we could have it in church, like the borough does, Catholic church annex.
Large area.
Or the Presbyterian church, We may not. I mean, yeah. You know, I thankfully, the group that asked to be on our next agenda, I understand, is down to two. But
I need to
had
be
as much
educated. I need to be re-educated on that one, because I don't get why we're even,
Lehigh,
like,
when they first started,
what they're even going around doing. We had the second one. I don't understand why they're doing it.
Are we able to discuss that piece of correspondence that's not on the agenda?
It was correspondence right into the meeting.
So the resolution is there to affirm the concept that new gun regulations,
although it doesn't say new, right, so read it thoroughly,
can be and are, from their perspective, viewed as unconstitutional. And it's asking municipalities to promise not to put any resources into enforcing any new gun rules, because they are viewed as unconstitutional rules.
Don't have a police department. I still don't get it.
Is that an issue on the table?
Tony, what is the...
No.
What's the long and the short of this?
The group asked, they've made their rounds to municipalities, and it's our turn.
Right. The long and short of it is that there is a group of individuals, they call themselves the Second Amendment Sanctuary group, and they're asking municipalities to adopt resolutions saying that they will not enforce laws or use any of the municipality's resources to enforce any laws which would restrict your right to bear arms under the Pennsylvania and U.S. constitutions. The problem with the resolution that they provided to us is that's a very long resolution, incorporates a couple of court cases, one of which has since been distinguished by the Supreme Court, but they don't mention that. It delves into areas that says that you're not going to enforce any laws that would restrict your right to own or bear arms. And I'm sitting next to someone who was in law enforcement for a very long time. There are certain laws that require you to take firearms away from individuals. And they are not unconstitutional. They've been held to be constitutional.
And this organization seems to take their own perspective of what is unconstitutional, and frankly, it is not the purview of this Board of Supervisors to determine what is or is not constitutional.
Yeah.
So Dingen Township
wrote their own resolution
because they were concerned about the language of the resolution. wrote their own resolution saying, hey, we're with you. We support individuals' rights to bear arms and protect their own properties.
Mm-hmm.
And we support your idea that laws which are deemed to be unconstitutional should not be enforced by the township as far as taking away weapons from citizens.
Okay? So it was just saying the township is withholding jurisdiction over that right. whole issue.
Right. So you know, there's three things wrong with the resolution. Okay. First, resolutions are non-binding. Second, the township, you take an oath to support and defend the Constitution when you take office. Okay. Yes, the Constitution has that Second Amendment, but it has a bunch of others too.
Well, you know, we have the right to free speech, but it doesn't give us the right to defame or slander or make terroristic threats or yell fire in a crowded theater. I think at the end of the day, Penny, is your question, do we have to have this on the agenda because they asked? Yes. Because they asked.
They asked. They asked to be on the agenda. I think you listen to them carefully.
Uh-huh.
You refer to council, and I'll review it and say, well, geez, we could do a proclamation or a resolution saying that, hey, you know, we support your efforts, but
if that's the case,
we're not going to enforce it. We're not going to say we're not going to enforce any gun laws.
PSATs had about 6 months ago a very extensive article about this in the Township News, and they warned townships that doing this could expose us to liability.
Correct.
That there are serious unintended consequences that could result. Because if there is an incident and an offender who is charged can look to this township resolution to say that they were confused by it, they can bring you into the litigation that will
result. And the one that comes to my mind is domestic assaults and protection from abuse, where the firearms are taken away from the offender without a hearing. If you have this resolution on file, that person can come back and say, well, wait a minute, you allowed that
law enforcement agency
to take my guns without due process of law in violation of your own resolution.
I'm such a Second Amendment. I'm for the Second Amendment.
I don't like
this. Why do we have to have all this?
What did Damon say? Damon said, I support you, but we don't believe we have jurisdiction to do any enforcement.
Well, and that's the third thing. The third most ridiculous thing about this is that Pennsylvania is a preemption state. You don't have any authority to pass any local gun
laws.
Legislation.
We don't even have the authority to say that people can't wear a gun when they come in this room or this building.
That's right.
So
we don't have any authority. We don't have any authority to do that. So this resolution is absolutely meaningless.
Yeah, it may not be meaningless if you're Milford Borough or you're Westfall Township.
Right.
Yes.
Where there are operating police departments.
Correct.
But even here, if we are exposing the township to liability,
correct,
that should be our gravest concern, is to protect, rather than doing something ceremonious
and I think
can have a long-term liability and risk to our community.
And in Dignan Township, they adopted kind of a meaningless resolution, if you read it.
I read it. I didn't think it was quite as toothless as that.
Yeah. And because of that, they actually had protest at the meetings because Dignan didn't pass their resolution.
Yeah.
They had protest at the meetings. They ran a candidate against the city supervisor, and he won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He beat him.
Yeah, but did he run on the Democrat?
Yeah, he's going to run on the Democrat.
Yeah. That's right.
It's ridiculous.
The last I had seen, he did not win on the
Democrat.
With the write-ins.
No.
He did win.
He lost on both sides.
I think so.
Which candidate are you saying lost?
With the write-in votes counted.
He won. I think he won.
He won both sides?
No.
I don't remember.
He was a Republican.
I'm thinking, he won the Democrat.
He won Democrat, he lost Republican.
So he is still on the ballot.
He's still on the ballot as a Democrat.
He is still on the ballot as a Democrat, yes.
Yes.
Good luck with that.
I think he'll pull off, I really do believe that.
However, I will say this, I agree with your assessment. I had this situation in Lehigh Township. The supervisors did not, it was brought to their attention before COVID. It was brought to their attention a few months ago. The resolution was on the agenda and they tabled it.
Definitely.
Just put it off.
Yeah, okay. Did I tell you I am not here at the next meeting? I'm serious too.
Well, that makes it hard for us to do a budget workshop as well.
And I just, as I'm thinking about it, no, I'll be just coming back home from Chicago, so I will not be here. I will try to get home in time to at least Zoom or, you know, whatever, but so just be prepared.
What is the bond for interim tax code?
Well, we're getting there.
Oh, we're gonna get there.
Okay, so where are we in regards to
COVID-19?
That item being on the agenda for the next meeting or not being on the agenda?
Put it on the agenda for next meeting.
Put it on and table it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can table it, subject to the gathering of more information.
I mean, to me, all we're doing is prolonging the inevitable, that, I mean.
We're small enough that maybe they'll just forget about it.
I don't think so.
No.
They keep coming down.
You know that my favorite reporter covers five municipalities.
That is right.
Who's that?
And so he's seen this presentation a number of different times, and he's been actually multiple times referenced in their social media posts.
Oh.
Because he asked Bob Bernathy if he had read the PSATs article when they were in Westfall the first time, and he referenced which municipalities had in fact not passed the resolution at that point in time anyway.
Well, what's interesting is that Luzerne County actually passed the resolution. I
the same resolution that we have in front of us?
It's a little bit different.
That is very shocking.
In fact, I did a little, because I was a little concerned about it, so I did some research on it. I probably threw it in this folder back here. But there are many, many municipalities.
Versions.
That have passed it, and even the six that they identify in Pike County as having passed it have all passed different versions. But Luzerne County did Resolution 2021-77, and they did it, and they did it exactly as written.
Really?
It looked like Delaware just passed the exact version that was
Delaware
presented to us.
Delaware did it exactly as written too, and so did Luzerne County.
That was a beefy, right?
Yep.
Who's the attorneys for Delaware Township?
It's Tom.
Tom. And Westfall passed it.
But Tom is also Lackawaxen, and Lackawaxen passed it.
Long time.
Oh, a year and a half ago.
Like, yeah, a long
they
time.
Were the first
one of the first ones.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they were coming with 40 people. Yeah. They came to Shohola with 40 people.
Yeah, I had about 30 of them.
Yes, right off the bat.
So are they in on the agenda for an upcoming meeting?
They asked to be on the agenda for our October 4th meeting.
And we're anticipating a big showing on their behalf?
Well, I understand that it went from 40 down to 2 at recent meetings.
Yeah. I noticed there's not as many standing around the post office as there was.
Mm-mm. So
Saturdays.
I copy 4 or 5 of them, and mm-hmm. and they're you know somewhat different. Delaware took a couple sentences out, but it's basically the same. Luzerne did it word for word. Dingman did their own, which they didn't like. And
they don't mention that when they tell us that 6 have passed.
Blooming Grove is almost verbatim. They passed it verbatim, and I think Lackawaxen passed it verbatim. So,
okay.
That's my report.
That surprised me.
So they'll be on the agenda for the next meeting, and stay tuned for what happens next.
Mm-hmm. I'm all ears.
Okay, so we've covered the ambulance.
And then we've done the plaque and COVID bond for interim tax collector.
Yeah, I think there was some question as to whether or not there was an existing bond.
Yeah.
There is one.
Yeah.
It is in Viola's name.
Yep.
The county should be notified that Viola
I think they know, right?
Tax collector.
They know.
They know. I think that's.
The question is, does Laura like you to present us with a new bond? Do we need to do anything in terms of setting the amount of the bond?
I think we need to let the county know, because the county sets the bond, and in this case, they did it for a 4-year period.
I believe, didn't you take copy of our minutes now? Or she needs a copy of the minutes now?
Lorelei.
Lorelei, did she take the minutes of the county?
No, she didn't take the minutes, she took a written document that she was appointed as the interim tax collector.
Okay.
And she will hand it to the school and county.
Okay.
Okay, but she needs to go to, she needs to go to the county clerk's office to ensure that her name is on this bond.
And then you said it's a 4-year bond?
We should ensure also that her name's on it. I mean, at this particular time, it's not our money that's being collected, but it's our money out of our community pocket.
Should I just call and ask for a copy of the bond?
We have the bond.
Oh, okay.
Bond's advised.
But it's advised.
Oh, okay, no, but for the new copy?
Yeah, her name needs to be added, and the county has to do, because the county purchased the bond.
Okay.
The county has to do that with the bonding company.
Okay.
They have to request, they have to change their roster of tax collectors, put Lorelei down instead of Viola.
So, can you call, is the county of clerks, is that, no, that's.
That's Gary.
That's Gary, okay, and ask him?
Yes.
To send you.
He would be the one to ask.
Of Lorelei to be on that bond?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, other public participation?
I have a quickie question. Is it posted in the newspaper when we have our next meeting, when is it, October, whatever it is?
Fourth.
Is it, is the agenda for that meeting in the newspaper to let the public know that this group is on the website?
It's posted on the building.
Shahan, where are we posting it at the building, our agendas?
I just put it on the table, that's all I do.
24 hours ahead.
The agenda?
Okay, so we need to be doing, we need to be posting it 24 hours ahead. We do have a bulletin board outside, but I think maybe we want to upgrade it at some point.
Yeah, it's a piece of plywood, which you can't even get a staple.
So we might want to upgrade that at some point, but on the door would suffice.
On the door would suffice.
Just to tape the agenda the day before.
24 hours ahead.
Thank you.
When you're leaving Friday.
Okay.
Or, well, for planning commission, it'd be 24 hours ahead.
Yeah.
Whatever the last business day is.
Just take whatever agenda is the final agenda on the door.
Executive session? Thank you.
Nope.
I'll make a motion that we pay the bills and adjourn.
Aye.
Aye.
Nice seeing you all again.
You too, Phyllis.
I don't like Zoom meetings personally. It's no fun.
I can't do this.
I don't know what happened to our crowd today, no?